Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Easter when we come back. Now, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law? And how many laws has our state and federal governments given us in our secular law and secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, and the state at last count has now given us 2.5 million laws. Now, the Apostle Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men in Acts 5, verse 29, and Congress said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. Our Supreme Court has said that there is a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, and that is loyalty to God, and they said that in Seeger versus United States. Now, every authority is in agreement. Our Congress, our Supreme Court, and our God, they're all in agreement that the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, if you'd like to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights, it's a right, it's a duty, it's an obligation that we owe to ourselves, to our families, and to our society. Now, here at the law school, we teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments along with the penalties that we all suffer for the violation of these laws. And we do that twice a year. So why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? And your First Amendment now is the gateway to the Second Amendment. Indeed, it's a gateway to the entire Bill of Rights. Now, the law of God may be old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives, and it's very relevant to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Easter this session. Now, Easter is a religious holiday. It's a Christian holiday. Christians practice Easter. Jews practice Passover. The Bible uses the word Passover 76 times, and in the King James Version, it uses the word Easter once. That one place is in Acts 12, verse 4. It's a flagrant mistranslation. It was intentionally put in by the King James translators, the word Easter in place of Passover, because the Christians practiced Easter. They were practicing Easter before they translated the Hebrew Scriptures into English. And they couldn't figure it out. They looked at it and they said, listen, Easter has been around for thousands of years. Easter has to be in the Bible. It has to be in the Bible because we all practice Easter. And so they put it in. Now, I mentioned to you the other day that there is a penalty for that over in Revelation, last chapter, last few verses. The author of the Bible, the author of the Scripture, said very plainly, he said, now, if you misrepresent what I say, I'm going to take your name right out of the book of life. And then I'm going to do something even worse. I'm going to add to you the plagues that are written in this book. Now, Easter is a pagan holiday, and every pulpit parrot knows it. There aren't any exceptions. There aren't any Christian preachers out there, boys and girls, that don't know that Easter is a pagan holiday. So why do they practice it? Well, go ask one. I don't know. And I know why I don't practice it, because it's pagan. Why other people practice it, basically it's ignorance. Most people don't read the Bible, and so they don't know. So if your excuse is, well, I didn't know, well, it's normal. And that's because religious people don't read the Bible. And if you happen to be a religious person that reads the Bible, you are a rare, rare person. Now, in a real neat book here called it's called Too Long in the Sun. You got to get a copy of it, because he's got a real neat article in here on Easter. It's put out by a fellow by the name of Reeves, or Rives, R-I-V-E-S, Reeves. I guess he'd pronounce it. And it's Partakers Publication, Post Office Box 23031 in Charlotte, North Carolina. They've also got an email address. It's www.toolong.com. It's www.toolong. That's spelled TOOLONG.com. Partakers Publications, Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina. Their zip code is 28227. That's 28227. Here's a short article, but let me cover it for you here. Easter. The English word Easter is derived from the name E-O-S-T-R-E, Oster, or Easter, E-A-S-T-R-E. Now, Easter is none other than Astarte, or Ashtaroth, who was introduced into the British Isles by the Druids, and is just one more name for Beltis, or Ishtar, of the Babylonians. Many goddesses have displayed the same characteristics, all claiming the title Queen of Heaven. In Judges 10, verse 6, we read this, says, "The children of Israel did evil again in the sight of the Eternal, and they served Balaam and Ashtaroth, and the gods of Syria, and the gods of Zidon, and the gods of Moab, and the gods of the children of Ammon, and the gods of the Philistines, and they forsook the Eternal, and served not him." Again, that's in Judges 10, verse 6. Astarte, Ashtaroth, is the queen of heaven to whom the Canaanites had burned incense and poured libations, as we read in Jeremiah chapter 44. Now, that's cited from the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, all the pulpit parrots go to college, and they all get their degrees from college. They become doctors of divinity. These are people who probably have never read the Bible themselves. They read excerpts out of the Bible and preach to you on Sunday morning. They'll come in there with a citation from Isaiah 27:14, and then they'll put on a long, boring dissertation on what they think that particular scripture means, discounting totally the fact that the scripture says that the scriptures have no private interpretation, but they interpret it anyway. Surely these people have read the Encyclopedia Britannica. Surely in their literature they have read about Astarte, Easter, and Christmas, and the secular origins of both, and the religious consequences from both the Bible and from secular sources such as the encyclopedias. Surely. But we will certainly do whatever thing goeth forth out of our own mouth, to burn incense unto the Queen of Heaven and to pour out drink offerings unto her, as we have done, we and our fathers, our kings and our princes, in the cities of Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem, for then had we plenty of victuals, and were well, and saw no evil. But since we left off to burn incense to the Queen of Heaven, and to pour out drink offerings unto her, we have wanted for all things, and we have been consumed by the sword and by the famine. And when we burned incense to the Queen of Heaven, and poured out drink offerings unto her, Did we make her cakes to worship her and pour out drink offerings unto her without our men? That's cited in Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19. That's a story about Easter mentioned in the Bible. It tells us what God did to these people for practicing Easter. He sent them war and famine and other assorted evils that aren't with specificity mentioned here. Could it be that the economic troubles and the wars that we're involved in, the collapse of our economy, the loss of our gold and silver, the corruption that we see in Washington, do you suppose that maybe that has something to do with our religious practices? Just as a thought. Do you suppose that maybe God himself is starting now to take notice of our pagan practices? Astarte, according to this, now Astarte was worshipped in Egypt, Ugarit among the Hittites, and in Canaan. Her Akkadian counterpart was Ishtar, spelled I-S-H-T-A-R. Later, she became assimilated with the Egyptian deities, Isis, I-S-I-S, and Hathor. In the Greek-Roman world, there was Aphrodite, Artemis, and Juno, all assuming the aspects of the Great Mother. The archaeologist Leland that explored Babylon and Nineveh documents the worship of Astarte or Ishtar found on Assyrian artifacts. Easter was not considered a Christian festival until the 4th century AD. Early Christians celebrated Passover on the 14th day of the first month, and the first month began on the first visible new moon after the vernal equinox. So the way the early Christians practiced this, they took the vernal equinox, March 21st, then the first crescent moon that they observed after that, and then they called that Passover. Now, I showed you already that that's not correct from the biblical description. And I showed you that there's five ways that people use to count the Passover. Now, whether they're correct or not, we'll leave that for you to decide. But in any event, even if you were practicing the Passover and you did it on the wrong day, let's just think about this for a second. Let's suppose you come up in the judgment and God asks you about it. He says, well, how'd you calculate the Passover, Bob? And you say, well, with the vernal equinox and the first sighting of the new crescent moon. Even if the boss said, well, you had it wrong, Bob. Gordon was right. It should have been on the barley ears and the full moon. The worst that he could do is say, hey, Bob, you got it wrong. You got a natural defense. You see, if you were using your head, you'd say, well, listen, didn't you tell me that you were going to speak to me with stammering lips and another tongue? And didn't you say that you were going to obfuscate the scripture so that I would stumble and fall backward and be broken and snared and taken? Didn't you tell me that in Isaiah 28? And you know, God himself is going to have to say, well, yeah, that's right, Bob, that's what I said. Then your response should be, well, God, you succeeded beyond your wildest expectations with me, because I was totally, totally deceived. I could not possibly have figured out the correct sighting or the correct day for the Passover. But I want you to know this, boss. I kept the Passover every year, just like you told me, and I followed all 52 instructions right out of Exodus chapter 12. Now, I think if you use that defense, I think you're going to have a pretty good one. Now, what are you going to say when you come into the judgment and you're practicing Easter? And he says, hey, Bob, did you practice Passover? Oh, no. No, I was practicing Easter. I was a pig-eating Christian, and we had ham every Easter. Now, what are you going to say? In Jeremiah chapter 10, this is a good one, Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6, it's actually talking about Christmas here. And he tells us that this Christmas tree, you know, that we're hauling out of the woods and bowing down to and worshiping is of pagan origin. And he says, learn not the way of the heathen. Well, the heathen have a number of pagan ways. You know, they do trees at Christmas and they do Easter eggs at Easter. And then they do trick or treat at Halloween. I mean, they've got a number of ways that they can give the finger to this God. But Jeremiah 10 tells us not to learn the way of the heathen, and this Easter is a pagan practice. And the secular sources tell us that. I mean, hell, we wouldn't know that if we hadn't read it in the encyclopedia, would we? Now, the average Joe Sixpack isn't going to get a hold of a copy of an obscure book like Too Long in the Sun, but everybody's got access to an encyclopedia, don't they? Now, the word translated in the King James Version of the Bible, Easter, is actually the Greek word Pascha, P-A-S-C-H-A, or Passover. Easter is not another name for Passover, and history reveals that the first month of the Israelite year begins on the first visible new moon after the vernal equinox, Passover, 14 days later at even. Easter is usually far from the true date for the Passover. Well, they're pretty close. This author says that they're far away. You'd be 2 weeks out of kilter if you were following the visible new crescent moon compared to the full moon. And if you were calculating it from the equinox rather than watching for the barley ears to grow, you'd be even further out of kilter. But you know, Easter and Passover come at about the same time of the year in the spring, and if you look on your calendar, almost always it'll mention Passover and Easter. Easter always appears or occurs on a Sunday. Passover can occur any day of the week. And in fact, it does. It occurs on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, or Saturday or Sunday. Easter always falls on a Sunday. So where does the date come from for the celebration of Easter? Well, the celebration of Easter was observed at different times by the Eastern and Western Roman Empire. In fact, Hillel II had changed the Jewish calendar prior to that time. And even today, Passover is not observed by Jews in accordance with the biblical instructions as to its timing. So as I mentioned to you earlier, the Jews observe Passover, but they don't practice it. There is one exception to that. There's a group of people out here that are called Messianic Jews, and I ran across one of them some years back. And he mentioned that they did the Passover, and so in passing I said, well, tell me about it. And so he said, well, we take a lamb, and we kill it, and then we skin it, and then we eviscerate it, and then we take the heart and the liver and we put it back in the cavity, sew it up, and then we cook it on an open spit. And I thought that was pretty good. And so I asked him, I said, did you read that section in the scripture there where it says, and with the pertinence thereof? And he said, yep, and that's why we put the heart and the liver back in it. And we do it with the pertinence thereof. Now, that's a construction that this guy came up with. Now, my construction, I looked at it. It looks like to me, with the pertinence thereof, I looked up pertinence, and it's the intestines. It's the innards. It's the guts. It's the... Well, now, the heart and the liver are certainly part of it. No doubt about it. And by putting it back in, I guess he's coming close. I mean, you know, in the judgment, God's going to have to ask him, hey, why did you do it with the pertinence? And he's going to tell him that story. And then I'm sure that God will tell him, well, you made a mistake, Bob. Or it could well be he'll come to me and he'll say, hey, Gordon, how come you didn't get that critter when you cooked it? And then I'm going to say, well, because you said we'll leave the pertinence therein. And then God's going to say, well, you know, you're kind of stupid, you know. You should have gutted it, and then you should have put the heart and the liver back in. And then I'm going to ask him and say, well, now, if that was your intention, how come you didn't tell me that? Why didn't you tell me? Gut it and put the heart and liver back in, seal it up, and we'll call that the pertinence thereof. Now, there's an old adage in law. It says, the intent of the lawmaker is the law. What was the intent? Well, there's another section here in Exodus chapter 12 that tells us not to break a bone of this animal. So I think it's pretty important, then, that we follow the directions. So I don't cut the tail off, I skin it out. Now somebody's going to say, well, how come you didn't cook it with the skin on it? Well, I had a student do that one time. And I asked him, I said, well, how'd that come out? And they said it was terrible. It was inedible because of the lanolin that's in the wool. And I said, now, you see, there isn't any description here that says, and do not skin it. Now, when we butcher an animal, there's a couple of normal things that you just do. And here's the way it works. First of all, you cut its throat and you kill it. And the second thing you do is you hang it up and then skin it. You cut off the front and hind legs at the first joint. Then you cut off the head. Then you make an incision and you remove the intestines. And then some people, if they like it, they save the heart and the liver. Sometimes they cut out the tongue. And there's nothing in the scripture that says you can't eat the brains, but it tells you plainly that on the Passover lamb, you're not to break a bone. So therefore, obviously, I say obviously, I don't know how else to get the brains out of the head except by breaking it. So it would seem like to me that you'd kind of by default have to leave the brains alone. So bottom line here then, when we're doing the Passover lamb, it's something different than that. If you go back here to Exodus 12, you find don't break a bone in his body. Wouldn't that preclude cutting his tail off? He's got to be without blemish. Doesn't that tell you then that he has to have his testicles intact? Now, if you're not going to break a bone, then I guess you could cut it off at the legs. I mean, cut the legs off without breaking a bone. But doesn't that smack of blemishing it? I mean, you wouldn't kill an animal if he'd lost a leg in an auto accident, would you? I mean, if this sheep had gotten run over or something and he was all smashed up and he was limping around on three legs, you wouldn't use that animal, would you? So I think when we follow the directions that we see in Exodus 12, you ought to leave the intestines intact. We tested it here at the farm. We've done it many, many times. And you bring him up on the 10th day, you stop giving him water the day before you kill him. And that pretty well takes care of the urine in the body cavity. When you kill them, they urinate, so it drains the bladder. And then when you're cooking them, it breaks open right down in the area of the testicles. The hole will pop open as it's cooking. And whatever liquid is inside the body cavity will drain down into the fire. When the body is turned over. See, on a spit, you're turning it, about every 15 minutes. And so when you get all through with this critter now, remember it says don't break any bones. And so we cut the meat off of the carcass. We don't cut the legs off and then fillet them. We cut the meat off of the carcass as it's laying there on the table. So I take him off the fire. I got him on this long pole, remember. And then we cut his back straps out and we cut off of his hind quarters and front quarters over there. And if you take a 6, 8, 10 month old lamb, he's in pretty good flesh, he's pretty good size. Feeds about 20 people. If you've got about a 30, 40 pound lamb, you ought to have enough there for 20 people. Without too much trouble. Now, I'm not sure that these people actually practice the Passover here that way. I've observed a lot of these Christian groups over here, and they do the bread and wine, and they sing a song, and they'll usually have some kind of a service at the same time. Very, very rarely do you find people that follow the directions that we see in Exodus chapter 12. By doing the Passover with a lamb, which was instructed three times that you're to do this forever. And as I pointed out, I said forever isn't up yet. So a lot of groups out there observe Passover. I'm not really sure that very many of them actually practice it. As I mentioned, this Messianic Jewish group over here, they do. And they're about the closest that I've seen. Now, almost all of these people follow the crescent moon, and I'm not here to take issue with people over how they do it or how they date it or whatever. My point is that this is a report, and a report for you to make a decision. I'm not here to exhort or to extol the virtues of Passover over Easter. I mean, adult people ought to be able to figure that out for themselves. But for those of you that write me and they ask, you know, well, tell me the story about this Easter and Passover, or tell me how to date it, you know, what's your take on it? Well, okay, I'll give you my take on it. So it says here, in the 14th day of the first month at even is the Lord's Passover. We see that in Leviticus 23, verse 5. Now, Leviticus 23 has all seven of the annual holy days in it. There are seven annual holy days. That's for all of you Adventists out there that write me. And you say, well, we practice the Sabbath, and that's the first one that's mentioned. It's the weekly Sabbath, and then there's seven annual holy days after that, and Adventists don't practice that. I've often wondered about that myself. Adventists wonder about that. Now, Adventists are not typical pig-eating Christians, and they follow a lot of the Scripture. The Jehovah's Witnesses, I think they're pig-eating Christians, I'm not quite sure, but they follow a lot of the Scripture. The Worldwide Church, they follow a lot of the Scripture, but I don't find that any of these people practice the Passover or do it with a lamb or do it by the full moon. None of them. Now, a study of the dates on which Easter is celebrated will reveal that the celebration of Easter is not observed in accordance with the prescribed time for the observance of Passover. The Easter that we see mentioned in Acts 12, verse 4, says this, "And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to four quaternions of soldiers to keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people." This word translated in the King James Version of the Bible, Easter, is actually the Greek word Pascha, or Passover. Easter is not another name for Passover, and history reveals that the first month of the Israelite sacred year begins on the first visible new moon after the vernal equinox. Now that's this guy's take on it. And he follows the crescent moon. And I've noticed this over the years, that most people follow the crescent moon. They do that because that's what the Jews do. And the people, practically to a man, will say, well, you know, if the Jews are doing it, it has to be right. Excuse me, boys and girls, but when was the majority ever right? I haven't seen it yet, and I'm an old man. I mentioned this to you the other day. I said, if you see the majority doing something, you do the exact opposite, and you'll probably be closer to the truth. Whatever the majority's doing, do the opposite. So where does this date from the celebration of Easter come from? Well, the celebration of Easter was observed at different times by the Eastern and Western Roman Empire, and it's Hillel, H-I-L-L-E-L the second, had changed the Jewish calendar prior to that time. See, the Jews at the time of the Messiah's death, the time of Christ, they were keeping the calendar differently than they were by the 4th century, or when Hillel, the Jewish astronomer, came up with the new dates. Now, here's the way that worked. See, the Jews are practicing Passover, and the Christians are practicing Easter, and Constantine wants to unite these two groups. So he comes to the Jews and he says, now look, boys, let's understand something here. You're living in our country. In our country, we're going to do Easter. And you people are going to do Easter right along with us. And if you don't, we're going to kill all of you. So Hillel, coming to an understanding of the truth as it was dictated by Constantine, came to a conclusion. And his conclusion was, I think that we Jews probably ought to do this about the way that the Romans are dictating it to us, because it's going to be healthier for us. Now, I think that had they obeyed God and kept his commandments, I think God would have protected them because that's been his habit. He did that for Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I suspect he would have done it for the Jews, but they figured that, oh, shucks, maybe God's gone way off someplace and probably getting old and unable to take care of us, so maybe we ought to follow what the Romans tell us to do. And that's the way that deal came down. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, the opinions, the beliefs, the comments, the views, the expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Easter. Easter versus the Passover. And so I introduced you to a new book here. It's called Too Long in the Sun. And it covers the sun worship of the Israelite people. We Israelites have been the world's preeminent sun worshipers. We've been doing it for just about as long as the pagans around us. Just as soon as we could learn how to do it from the pagans around us, we got right into it with both hands right up to our elbows. And we've been doing it very effectively ever since. And now we're exporting it. We send missionaries all over the world to train the pagan nations around us how to practice these pagan customs in case, for some odd reason, they might not have learned these pagan customs on their own. We're out there teaching it to them through our missionary work. And that's where your missionary dollars go. It's going to Africa and Asia and other places so that we can teach these people how to practice Easter, Christmas, Lent, and all the rest of the pagan practices that we learned from the Egyptians, the Babylonians, and the Assyrians. Now, after much debate, the Nicene Council of 325 A.D. decreed that Easter should be celebrated on the first Sunday after the vernal equinox. This makes the date vary from March 22nd to April the 25th. So why was so much debate necessary if Easter was a tradition passed down from the apostles? The answer is that it was not an apostolic institution, but it was an invention of man. So they had to make up some rules. The historian Socrates said in the 5th century, "Thus much already laid down may seem a sufficient treatise to prove that the celebration of the Feast of Easter began everywhere, more of custom than by the commandment either of Christ or the apostles." History records that spring festivals in honor of the pagan fertility goddesses and the events associated with them were celebrated at the same time as Easter. In the year 399 AD, the Theodosian Code attempted to remove the pagan connotation from these events and banned their observance on Easter and Christmas. People still celebrated the pagan festival in honor of Issus. They just called it something else. They called it Easter. In the book on Roman time, the Codex Calendar of 354 AD, the author, Salzman, states that many of the rites associated with Isis were retained in the Christian celebration of Easter. Now in Matthew 15, verses 7 through 9, the Messiah made this observation. He said, "You hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy of you, saying, 'This people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. But in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men.'" You'll see that in Matthew 15, verses 7 through 9. Now, religious people do that. You know, they come up and they knock on my door and they say, "Do you know Jesus?" And then they'll say, "Are you saved, brother?" And then they'll say, "Do you know the Lord?" I mean, they have all these little catchphrases. And they talk very piously and they talk reverently of Jesus and his crucifixion and all the nice things that Jesus did for us. And then they go out here and they eat pig on Easter, which is, by the way, an abomination. Eating pig is an abomination. Did you know that? Let me see if I can find that. I didn't look it up here in advance, but it's about Isaiah, I don't know, 57, 58, something like that. Let me see if I can just dig it out here for you. Eating swine in the mouth. It's in Isaiah 66. Where it says here, "They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves in the gardens behind one tree in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abomination and the mouse shall be consumed together, saith the Eternal. Because I know their works and their thoughts, and it shall come that I will gather all of the nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. And I'll set a sign among them, and I'll send those that escape of them unto the nations to Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow to Tubal, and Javan to the isles afar off, that have not heard my fame, neither have they seen my glory, and they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles." We are going to be deported, boys and girls, from the North American continent and sent into national captivity for practicing Easter. How do I know that? Well, because in the penal clause chapter in Deuteronomy 28, let me see if I can find that for you quick. Deuteronomy chapter 28. There is a statement in here that follows that very line. Here it is. And he says, "And the Eternal shall bring you into Egypt again with ships, by the way whereof I spoke unto you, you shall see it no more again. And there you shall be sold unto your enemies for bondsmen and bondwomen, and no man shall buy you." And the reason that no man shall buy you is because all of the nations now have banned the private ownership of bondservants and slaves. Bondservants and slaves are now owned by the state, as evidenced by your Social Security account number. And all the nations now have adopted Social Security. So you got a Social Security program in England and Ireland and Scotland and on the continent and South America and here in the United States and Canada. And you know, you hang different labels on it. You know, you call it national health care insurance and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, the bottom line is you're now owned by the state. And national captivity is the results that come from the violation of these laws. So I just thought I'd tell you to get ready for it. Get ready, pack your bag. You'll be leaving. Now, history records that these spring festivals were done in honor of the pagan fertility goddesses. There is no biblical authority for the celebration of Lent, either. This thing of Lent precedes the Passover. Now, Lent was an observance connected with Babylonian worship of Astarte and Ishtar. It has been documented that the pagan celebration of Lent has been celebrated by many religions, not even remotely associated with Christianity. I got to underline that. It has been documented that Lent has been celebrated by many religions, not even remotely associated with Christianity. Now, even the people who practice the Passover call themselves Christians. I'm not quite sure why that is, but it certainly is. And Christians are divided into two camps for you people out there that don't practice this Christianity. There's two camps. There's good Christians and then there's bad Christians. Good Christians go to church every Sunday, and they're religious people that practice Christmas, Easter, and New Year's. And then there's bad Christians. The bad Christians are those that only practice Christmas and Easter. So they only go to church twice a year. Those are called bad Christians. Now, if you take a look at the Christian practices, they're practicing paganism, for which God has condemned us, all of us, good and bad. He said, I'm going to send you all into national captivity now because you honor me with your lips, and you pray to me, and you get real syrupy, and you get real religious. Don't you just love Jesus today? But your heart's far from me. And because of that, and because of your pagan practices, I'm going to send you into national captivity. This God here is not kind. He ain't gentle. I've said it before. I'll say it again. This guy's meaner than a junkyard dog. Well, you know, to people, I give him the finger. Now, if you don't give him the finger, he's not a bad guy. But, you know, give him the finger, you know, and the guy goes postal on you. And you can see that time and again. You know, Sodom and Gomorrah, that's a postal. The destruction of the whole Egyptian army in the Red Sea. Actually, it was the Gulf of Aqaba, but then that's another story for another day. You know, you heard about the Red Sea crossing over here, killed the whole Egyptian army. That's not kind and gentle. Shucks, if the guy was kind and gentle, he'd take some prisoners. This God doesn't take prisoners. Kills them all. He's a genocidal maniac, and on top of that, he's a racist. He's the author of race. You know, for all of you people out there didn't know that. Yeah, the author of race. This is the guy that created the five races of people. Actually, there's three, but, you know, we've interbred the races now until we got five. Again, we have improved upon God. He gave us three races. We extended it to five. I mean, the guy should really be enthralled by all of our hard work, you know. He does a job, and we come along and fix it for him. And I think that's just real special, don't you? Well, anyway, we got these races, and this God over here separated all the races at the Tower of Babel. And then he said, I'm going to give you Chinese your piece of real estate over here, and I'm going to give you black Africans, you know, you Negroes. I'm going to give you Africa. And then you whites, I'm going to ship you off up here into the cold regions of Europe. And then we, the white guys, you know, we decided that we needed an amalgamation. So hell, we've been working our hearts out, bringing Chinese over here to build our railroads and blacks to hoe cotton. But hey, listen, you ought to thank us. We brought you over here so we could teach you democracy. And so those people, we brought them over here, and they're not very grateful, you know. Bunch of ingrates. Bring them over here to hoe cotton, and then they get mean. Bring them over here to build railroads, and then they go segregate themselves into Chinatown, and then they want to do business on their own. Well, anyway, that's another day for another topic. This God over here, he actually killed a whole bunch of people, too. He took the Amalekites over here and just wiped them out. There's whole groups of people called the Hittites and Jebusites and so on. They don't exist today. You know why? Because he sent our forefathers after him and said, I want them all destroyed. Why don't you kill them all? And in some cases we did, and in some cases we didn't. And in those cases where we didn't, you know, you'd have fewer groups of people, fewer nations or nationalities today if we'd have followed our instructions, but we didn't. All right. Now, among the pagans, this Lent seems to have been an indispensable preliminary to the great annual festival in commemoration of the death and resurrection of Temmuz. Temmuz. Got that? So, the people that actually call themselves Christians over here come into these two camps. Now, you got actually a third camp beginning to evolve here. You got the good Christians and bad Christians. Good Christians go to church every Sunday. Bad Christians over here go to church Christmas and Easter. And then you got this third group that we're beginning to see evolve out here. These people are iconoclasts who practice the Passover instead of Easter. Don't practice Christmas, and they don't go to church on Sunday. They go to church on Saturday. Now, I'm at a loss here. I can't explain that. You got Christians that go to church on Saturday like the Jews. They keep the Sabbath. They don't practice Christmas and Easter. They practice the Passover, but they don't do it with the Lamb. But they don't do Christmas. They don't do Halloween. In many cases, they actually observe some of the annual holy days, but not all of them, such as with the Adventists. And yet they call themselves Christians also. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, you donate money to the Republican Party and you call yourself a Democrat. And then you vote for a communist. There's something about that that just doesn't ring quite true. I can't explain it to you, but I mean it's a phenomenon that we see here in the United States. And so why that is, I can't quite tell you. Now, I'm a cat of a little different breed over here. I don't call myself a Christian. But then I don't call myself a Democrat either, and I don't donate money to the Republican Party and vote for the Communists. Now, while we're on the subject of voting over here, we're in election season here in the United States. And we're trying to figure out whether we want Hillary or Barack. Both of them are Communists. The only non-Communist running for president in the United States is an obscure representative from an obscure region of Texas called Ron Paul. And this guy, Ron Paul, is about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. I mean, there isn't anybody going to vote for Ron Paul. Well, I shouldn't say anybody. 4 or 5 million people here in the United States that are kind of iconoclastic, politically disconnected nitwits that are voting for Ron Paul. There's a small minority of Americans that are actually anti-communist. And I say anti-communist. They recognize that sending your children to public school is the 10th plank to the Communist Manifesto, so they educate their children at home or they send them to private school. And then there's the same group of people over here. They recognize, for instance, that the income tax is the second plank to the Communist Manifesto, and that the fifth plank is the central bank plank. You know, that's the Federal Reserve. And that the fourth plank calls for an inheritance tax, and they're opposed to that. I mean, there are some people here that actually recognize communism. Now, this communism is directly derived from religion. It comes from the Babylonian mystery religion. I mean, when you trace this thing out and you go back to their practices, you know, these religious practices that these people use are communist to the core. And then they practice it in their voting and their secular government. And then they go to church on Sunday, they pick up the Bible and say that this communism comes out of the Bible. No, wait a minute. Thou shalt not steal is the exact opposite to from each according to his ability and to each according to his need. The very basis of private property rights, personal private property rights, is based upon thou shalt not steal. Without it, you can't have property rights. Communists don't practice property rights. Christians don't practice property rights. Christians practice communism. Christians send their children to public school. Christians use Federal Reserve notes. Christians pay income tax. Christians practice inheritance tax. Children? These are religious ideologies. Communism is a religion. And it stems from Christianity. And Christianity stems from the Babylonian mystery religion, from whence most of these customs come from. And these customs come from Astarte and Juno and Bibel and Ashtaroth and all these various and sundry gods. There's about, I don't know, 50 or 75, I suppose, of these various gods, you know, Hathor. And this guy mentions, you know, quite a few of them. You've heard a lot of these names, you know, like Mars, for instance. And Venus, and Saturn, and Jupiter. See, these are names of these pagan gods, and so we name planets, you know, in our solar system after them. And then the months of our years, you know, the months of our calendar, and the days of our weeks, you know, like Monday is Moon Day. And Tuesday, you know, that's a pagan god. And then there's Thursday, Thor's Day. And Friday, that's Frida. See, we have these gods, lots of them, and the Christians worship these gods. And that's the anomaly that I see here. I don't know why these people that actually practice some of the laws of God, they may not practice all of them, they practice some of them, they call themselves Christians. I mean, that's like, you know, you're a housewife and you call yourself a whore because, you know, all whores are females, and I'm a female, so therefore I must be a whore. It would seem like to me that, you know, if you weren't a whore, that you wouldn't run around hanging that label on yourself. So when I saw that years ago, I said, oh, yeah. See, I used to be a Christian. I mean, I was raised as one. I was born and sent to Lutheran school. I told you that, you know, I went to Lutheran school. I found out that if you don't belong to the right corporate entity, the Missouri Synod of the Lutheran Church, you're going right straight to hell. I found that. I got that from Pastor Kohler, told me that. In catechism, told all the little boys and girls that. And I thought that's kind of strange. Because some of my best friends, you know, weren't Lutherans. They were Baptists and Episcopalians. And one of them was a Catholic. I mean, poor old Eddie, he didn't have a snowball's chance in hell. He wasn't even a Protestant. He was a Catholic. We all knew he was going to hell. But, you know, God bless Eddie. Well, anyway, I'll leave it to you. You can figure it out for yourself. Again, let me remind you who wrote this book over here. He's a hell of a nice guy. I'm sure if he heard this program, he wouldn't say that about me, but, you know, I think he's a hell of a nice guy. He wrote a little section in here. He says, do not read past this page unless you're willing to take responsibility for the information contained herein. He's a pretty nice guy. He's trying to protect you. I don't care. I'm a reporter. I just come out here and report facts. And this guy here is evidently religious, and he wants to protect you from the wrath of God. He says, for the information contained in this book will require a decision on the part of the reader. Either one will accept it as true or reject it as false. Or true, but not important. So if you're not aware of the information contained in this book, and after prayerful evaluation find it to be true, it may require extreme changes in your lifestyle. Boy, you can say that again. If changes are called for and implemented, most people will find their actions strange and unusual. Many times, even friends and family. Yeah, that's true. I discovered that. Hell, my family won't even talk to me. I got one daughter calls me on the telephone every once in a while. Maybe. If the moon is just right. Anyway, this guy's name over here is Reeves, R-I-V-E-S, all I know. It says here right here on the jacket, it says Reeves, R-I-V-E-S. I thought he wrote a hell of a good book. And you can probably go right to his website. It's www.toolong.com. That's spelled T-O-O, by the way, T-O-O-L-O-N-G. Just one word, toolong.com. Or you could probably write to him. You know, it's Partakers Publications. Post Office Box 23031, Charlotte, North Carolina, 28227. Once more, that's Partakers Publications, P.O. Box 23031, toolong.com. They've got an email here. It's toolong@united.net. You can probably send the guy an email if you wanted to. Too long is spelled TOOLONG at united.net. He says, this book is not written in a form for entertainment. Warning. It's on page 3. I thought that was pretty big of him. I didn't give you any such warning. I just told you. So anyway, getting back here to the story. Among the pagans, this Lent seems to have been an indispensable preliminary to the great annual festival of in commemoration of the death and resurrection of Tammuz. I thought it was Jesus that died and was resurrected. No. There was a death and resurrection among the pagans of this pagan god Tammuz long before Jesus was ever thought of, which was celebrated by alternate weeping and rejoicing in which in being observed in Palestine and Assyria in June, therefore called the month of Tammuz, in Egypt about the middle of May, and in Britain sometime in April. To conciliate the pagans to nominal Christianity, Rome, pursuing its usual policy, took measures to get the Christian and pagan festivals amalgamated. That was the great contribution of the Roman Empire to civilization and Christianity. They got the pagans and the Christians to all keep these pagan festivals at the same time. And by a complicated but skillful adjustment of the calendar, it was found no difficult matter in general to get paganism and Christianity, now far sunk into idolatry, in this as in so many other things, to shake hands. The Encyclopedia Britannica reconfirms the statements of Hyslop. The celebration in March, April that marked the death of the god also seemed to have dramatically performed. Abominations and then greater abominations. And this is in Ezekiel 8. Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. And then said he unto me, have you seen this, O son of man? Turn thee yet again, and you shall see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Eternal, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men, with their backs toward the temple of the Eternal, and their faces toward the east, and they worshipped the sun toward the east. And what do you people do? On Easter sunrise, Sunday morning, you go out there and you worship the sun coming up, just like the pagan sun worshippers have been doing for thousands of years. And then you say, but we're doing it for Jesus! We're worshiping the sun, okay, but we're doing it for Jesus because we love him. Remember, it was this Jesus that told you not to learn the way of the heathen. And he told you not to add to this program. Don't take anything away from it. Well, so much, you know, for following instructions. That's why my old daddy told me, he said, son, if you can learn to sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told, you're going to go a long ways in the world. Yeah, I'm running out of time here, so I got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're about out of time, so I'm going to have to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review. And we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.